From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Yesterday, months after Michael Brown's death in Ferguson, Missouri, the U.S. Department of Justice out with a big and damning report on the Ferguson Police Department. Ferguson's law enforcement, it says, both reflects and reinforces racial bias, due in part to intentional discrimination on the basis of race. The numbers don't look good. Neither do the overtly racist emails. This hour, On Point, race, police, and Ferguson. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you make of the Justice Department report? Do you see this problem in your own community? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Last summer in the street, Jeremy Roan, protester in Ferguson, told reporters he'd come out from St. Louis because he wanted to send a message. Even then, he was saying things have to change here.
I'm a father. I have two boys. No way am I going to raise them to be in fear of the very people who they pay to protect them.
Yesterday in Washington, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder describing the results of what he called the Justice Department's searing report.
This investigation found a community that was deeply polarized. A community where deep distrust and hostility often characterized interactions between police and area residents.
And there's more. Holder.
Members of the community may not have been responding only to a single isolated confrontation, but also to a pervasive, corrosive, and deeply unfortunate lack of trust, attributable to numerous constitutional violations by their law enforcement officials, including First Amendment abuses, unreasonable searches and seizures, and excessive and dangerous use of force, exacerbated by severely disproportionate use of these tactics against African Americans.
Do the people of Ferguson know it? Yes, they do. 23-year-old Aroya Davis lives near Ferguson. She talked with NPR about how she wants to make sure that the little memorial there in the street to the slain Michael Brown stays intact.
It's a symbol of what's going on with the black people here. It's, war is being waged on us.
Joining me now from Washington is Wesley Lowry, reporter for The Washington Post. He was arrested and held by the Ferguson police while reporting from Ferguson last August. He's been reporting on the Department of Justice findings. Wesley, thank you very much for joining us today.
Of course, thanks for having me.
And from St. Louis, Antonio French is with us, Democratic alderman from the 21st Ward in St. Louis. He was also arrested in Ferguson in August for unlawful assembly. And Alderman French, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
First to you, Wesley. These findings, is this what was expected? There were not civil rights charges against Darren Wilson, the policeman who shot Michael Brown, but there was a very broad critique here of the justice, the way justice is exercised, and the police in particular in Ferguson. What do you think of the report, Wesley?
I think for most people who are paying attention, much less for people who live in Greater St. Louis, as the alderman does, and I do not, this was not much of a surprise. No one quite expected federal civil rights charges against Darren Wilson. However, anyone who's been paying attention, I remember the first day I arrived in Ferguson, and I was hearing horrific anecdotes of things that seemed to be clear constitutional violations of a police department that had run amok. And again, not even just in Ferguson, but also around St. Louis County. And so for people who spent time talking to residents of Ferguson, especially black residents of Ferguson, none of the findings in this report were actually that surprising.
Antonio French, let's look at the numbers. There's a lot to look at here, but the numbers. The overwhelming majority of tickets and arrests and use of force and police discretion, it racially seems to lean heavily toward blacks. Blacks are African Americans, about 2/3 of the population of Ferguson, but 80-90% and upward of police action there. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And the thing to keep in mind here is that while the percentages are high, when you look at the raw numbers, you're talking about a population that is even larger than the population of Ferguson. So these are people who are just traveling through the city limits of Ferguson. One of the things that came out last year was that there were twice as many outstanding warrants as there were citizens of Ferguson. So this is really just African Americans who are also traveling through Ferguson that are being penalized here. And it becomes a form of taxation by citation that is exclusively reserved for African Americans.
Wesley Lowry, the Department of Justice looked specifically, and we've talked about this on this show before, but about how the local courts
had a lot to do with this. The city in Ferguson, like other communities around St. Louis, heavily dependent on revenue from police fines and so on to finance the city itself. And that driving this is a kind of sort of farming Ferguson for cash.
Of course, the DOJ report laid it out pretty plainly. It said, in fact, that Ferguson PD does not serve to ensure public safety. Rather, it exists to drive revenue to the city. Police revenue through tickets, through arrests, through court fees are the second biggest source of revenue for the city. And what we know, if you look at the map in St. Louis County and much of North County where Ferguson is, you have municipalities that could not exist if they were not pulling people over and filing charges against people for any number of things. That this is how and the only reason these cities can exist is because of this ticket revenue. And any time, as independent studies and professors who've looked at this, any time you have municipalities that rely on crime to pay their bills and keep their lights on, you're only going to have an incentive, therefore, to start maybe making up some crimes sometimes.
93% of arrests went to African-Americans in Ferguson, a city two-thirds African-American. 100%, as I'm reading here, of the use of dogs on citizens, where they were actually attacked, bitten by the police dogs, all African-American. Department of Justice reports saying our investigation has revealed that these disparities occur at least in part because of unlawful bias against and stereotypes about African-Americans. Antonio French, what about people around the country watching this and saying, well, maybe African-Americans committed 95% of the crime, so of course you've got 95% of the arrests?
Well, you know, even if you're talking about traffic stops, obviously, you know, both black and white citizens speed, but selectively only African-Americans were pulled over in Ferguson. And again, it's not just Ferguson. Many municipalities around Ferguson engage in the same, if not worse, behavior. And so it seems like it's selective enforcement of the law, and it really preys on those folks who are less likely to be able to defend themselves in court or fight these charges.
And Wesley, what about the emails that came out? There were a half dozen or more that the Department of Justice included. I'm sure people have heard about these by now, but these just seemed like stark racism. Depict email. This is from people within the police department depicting President Obama as a chimpanzee, saying he wouldn't hold office for very long because what black man holds a steady job for 4 years? Showing apparently bare-chested women in Africa with the caption Michelle Obama's high school reunion, talking about pregnancy termination as crime stoppers when it came to African-American babies. Does this surprise you, Wesley, after your experience in Ferguson?
Not quite. not quite at all. I think that and one of the things here, because a lot of people say, well, why does it matter? I mean, everyone's got that uncle who forwards you a joke, you know, who sends something that may be a little off color. One of the reasons it matters, and this is actually something that I was having a conversation with a skeptic, with a critic. It's a guy who, in a lot of cases, has said, hey, maybe it's not that racist. But he pointed this out. He goes, you can't call someone a monkey, or you can't call a group of people a monkey and then police them fairly. That police are taxpayer public service, that they're here to serve and protect equally and equitably. And that if you hold contempt or some type of prejudicial view towards any group of people who you have to police, it's impossible to then police them fairly and adequately. And so that's one of the reasons these things matter, is that and not nearly as much as a lot of the other stuff in the report. But at the end of the day, if your police supervisors, because again, these weren't interns in Ferguson PD.
Yeah.
Every person who sent these was a supervisor either at the Ferguson PD or in the city court system. If you can't, you know, if you can't realize how that may be discriminatory or how that might be coloring your view in a way that is prejudicial, how can you possibly ensure justice for these people and ensure their safety, which is the role? It's what the Ferguson taxpayers pay these officers to do.
Antonio French, you're there in St. Louis. You're an African-American man. Did you feel or presume that kind of racism behind the badge in a town like Ferguson City?
Absolutely. I mean, growing up in St. Louis, you quickly learn what towns to drive through, what towns not to, how to engage with police officers in different municipalities. In many cases, you know, you kind of change your route to a certain destination to not go through certain towns. A street that became very famous during the protest, West Florissant Avenue, is a street that actually passes through multiple municipalities. So if you've got a light out, you know, backlight light out or something, mm-hmm. you may get pulled over six times by six different municipalities in a 1 mile or 2 mile stretch.
That could happen, and yet it wouldn't have to have, I suppose, that kind of vicious racism in these emails behind it. I mean, people could just be farming for revenue, but that sentiment, that, you know, that's just kind of real old school, old fashioned, straight up racism in these so-called jokes.
Yeah, and what it really highlights, though, is a culture that has been allowed to persist in these local municipalities and these police departments. And what citizens have been describing and protesters have been complaining of is this dehumanizing of people. And I think these emails reinforce it. The stats actually more so reinforcement. And even some of the incidents we saw back in August and September, you might remember a video that was made famous where an officer called a bunch of protesters animals and pointed weapons at them. So, you know, this has been just reinforces what people have been saying for many months now.
Is this what brought people out into the streets so angrily last summer? I mean, of course, there was the proximate cause of Michael Brown's death and lots of questions around that. But this underlying history.
Yeah, I think it had been building for so long. The death of Michael Brown, unfortunately, is not uncommon. We have lots of too many police shootings and fatalities in the St. Louis region. But the response of the local police department to the people who came out to support the family, the response with snipers and armed vehicles within hours of Mike Brown's body being on that ground, it angered so many people that this just really set it all off.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the Department of Justice report on race and policing in Ferguson, Missouri, what it's now laid out for the whole country to see. And it's not just Ferguson's problem. Wesley Lowery is with us, reporter for The Washington Post. He covered all the uproar there last summer, was arrested in the midst of that. You may remember he and a Huffington Post reporter arrested with their kit in a McDonald's for reporting on what was going on. Antonio French arrested there also for unlawful assembly last summer. Democratic alderman from St. Louis joins us from St. Louis today. Just last month, Ferguson Police Chief Tom Jackson told CBS News correspondent Dean Reynolds his department is misunderstood.
Did you discover a racial problem in the department?
No.
None.
No, there is not a racial problem in the police department.
No racial difficulties, no racial issues,
no racists in the department? We clearly have a racial divide that is perceived by a large part of the community.
A racial divide, not a racial problem, says the Ferguson Police Chief Tom Jackson there. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder here yesterday, a little different depiction of Ferguson and police practices.
A community where local authorities consistently approached law enforcement not as a means for protecting public safety, but as a way to generate revenue. A community where both policing and municipal court practices were found to be disproportionately harmful to African American residents. A community where this harm frequently appears to stem, at least in part, from racial bias, both implicit and explicit.
And here Congressman Jim Clyburn of South Carolina, member of the Congressional Black Caucus yesterday, talking about these problems not confined to Ferguson, wider around St. Louis, maybe wider than that.
I found out it's not just Ferguson. There are townships or jurisdictions that seem to be strung all around St. Louis where this problem is very pronounced.
Wesley Lowery, Antonio French, please stand by. With us right now from Ferguson, Missouri, is Terry Franks, 49 years old. She and her children have been pulled over and stopped by the Ferguson police many times. Terry Franks, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom.
Were you surprised by something, anything in this report, madam?
No, I wasn't. And there's not a black person in North St. Louis County that was surprised.
Why not?
Because it's a racial thing. It's a racial thing. It's an economic thing. You know, I mean, the people of Ferguson, not only Ferguson, all of North County, all of St. Louis, the St. Louis North County area, we're all looked at as criminals. Everything we do is criminalized. You hear me? Everything. You know, so It's like the lowest possible contact with the justice system. I may hit a U-turn, or my windows may be tinted, or loud music, or you may have a fender bender that's not even your fault. But because you have warrants, every single thing is criminalized. They criminalize everything in our community.
What's described in this report is warrants piling up for people who very often can't.
Yeah, you get a warrant. You get a warrant for a failure to appear. You get a fine for not paying your fine. How can you fine somebody for not paying their fine if they can't pay their fine in the first place?
Terry Franks, stand by.
And the city officials will go around and say, no, there's not a problem. There's not a racial problem. It's a lack of personal responsibility. Since when is a lack of personal responsibility a crime? And to what degree? And who gets to decide?
Well, stand by, Terry. Antonio French, explain this a little bit, because we've talked about this before on this show, and we've had callers call in and say, look, if there's a warrant, respond to it. If you've got a court date, go to it. Clean the stuff up. What's the problem?
Yeah, what Ms. Franks is describing is the frustration that so many African Americans have in this community, where even the most minor infraction can really become a life-altering event. So you get pulled over for a taillight being out, and then over the course of fine after fine, warrants, next thing you know, you're out of $2,000. You might have spent some nights in jail and lost your job. And that doesn't help build trust between police and the community. It actually works to erode it. And then when you talk about greater crimes like homicide and murder and things like that, that trust has been broken so much where you don't get the cooperation between the community and the police department anymore because they don't see them as actually helping. And so it actually works to make our community less safe. And it just frustrates people so much, as you heard from Ms. Franks. And that's what has really spilt over, and that's what you saw in the streets of Ferguson in August.
Terry Franks, do you agree? Is this what the people of Ferguson were trying to tell the country in August when they came out against the guns and tear gas to protest so vividly?
Of course. Everybody is. It's at a breaking point. You try to keep up. You try to keep up with the fines, the warrants. There's no way possible. God forbid you have kids. I have three sons. They're all driving age, along with myself.
Wesley Lowery, I can hear the voice of the police in Ferguson saying, yes, but. We have to keep order in this town. We can't let crime just go. We can't let everything, you know.
That sounds a lot like the sheriff in Selma, Alabama, 50 years ago. You know, you guys can't march over the bridge. We got laws in this place here in Alabama. I mean, of course, that's what the police are going to say. Of course, when the Department of Justice concludes that a police department systemically and systematically employs racial discrimination against its residents, of course the powers that be, of course the all-white police force is going to say that's not the case. Of course that's what they're going to say. But what we can see here, based on this DOJ report, and this is what I say even as I go back and forth sometimes with critics on this, I say you have to read this report because anecdote after anecdote in this report, the statistics in this report, it is all completely damning. There's no way you can read this, no matter how skeptical you are, no matter how pro-police you are. And again, I think all of us on the phone, I know the aldermen, I think all of us are pro-police. We all think police are an important part of society. We all support them. But with that said, you cannot read this report and not walk away concluding that there are some deep issues that have to be resolved within the Ferguson Police Department and within other police departments in Greater St. Louis.
New York Times editorial summing it up, deep-seated biases throughout Ferguson's power structure to entrap the city's black community in a hellish cycle of arrests for minor offenses, fines they could not pay, crippling financial penalties, loss of driver's license, jail time, lost jobs, eviction. You got no house, you have no job. Bernard in Columbia, South Carolina. Thank you for calling, Bernard. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Okay. What do you see, Bernard?
Well, this is not a problem that is not familiar with other communities throughout the country. Back there in the mid-90s, I was a police officer, just joined the Wilmington Police Department in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
When I joined that department, the command staff was all white, all white males. They had one white female. And one of the things in that community is similar to what's going on in Ferguson is I'm trying to understand is if you have the Justice Department come in and deliver such a scathing report.
Yes.
How is it that the city manager has yet to fire the police chief? I don't understand. How is that police chief still the police chief? Because that command staff condoned that behavior. That behavior would never existed if the command staff did their job. Simple as that. They need to weed and seed that entire department.
Bernard, I appreciate your call. Antonio French, what about that? Department of Justice came out this week to St. Louis, sat down with Ferguson folks in downtown, and laid out their report. What about the response? Is anyone gone in the command tier?
No. No one has accepted any level of responsibility at all, and that really adds to the frustration. You know, I called for the resignation of the chief of the Ferguson Police Department back in August, just due to the response that he had to the community, which I think escalated the situation to the point of violence. But now some of the things laid out in the DOJ report are undeniable. And there needs to be some level of accountability. So there was a press conference called by the city of Ferguson yesterday. We expected the chief to be there along with the city manager and the mayor. In fact, it was only the mayor there. He read a prepared statement and then wouldn't take any questions. And so, yes, all the people responsible, all the people who have maintained this culture of racism and really had led to the events we saw the last few months are all still in power. And that really frustrates people.
Terry Franks, there in Ferguson, what do you think needs to happen, madam?
I believe that, number one, they need to abolish all of these municipalities. They need to condense them, because each municipality, which could be 5 miles away from each other, they all have an agenda to get money.
And you have a lot around St. Louis. I mean, Ferguson's only 21,000 people. You've got this whole chain, a little tiny...
You have Bridgeton, you have Jennings, you have Bell Ridge, you have Bell Fountain, you have Ferguson, you have Overland, St. Ann, St. John.
They all have budgets that they want to feed. They end up feeding.
They all have budgets. Mm-hmm. They all have budgets that they have to provide for their government.
And actually, Ferguson is one of the larger ones. You have some with only about 1,000 people with their own police department.
In that case, policing would really become a revenue source, I guess. So, Terry, let's say they do that reorganize. What else?
And I think they need to get rid of the police chief. They need to get rid of all of the government and just start all over. Just start completely fresh.
Blanks.
You know, I was raised in San Diego, California. All I've ever known is one police force. And it, you know, San Diego, we have our problems there, too, with minorities. Mm-hmm. However, there's not a sense that there's a money grab. You don't feel it. You don't see it. You don't think it.
But a lot of people feeling it in Ferguson.
Yeah, they're feeling it in Ferguson because you may have an outstanding warrant in four counties. So you got to pay $300 here, $300 here, and you just go from town to town to town. You get stopped for a blinker, and next thing you know, your life is over as you know it.
Terry Franks in Ferguson, you make it very real for us, for you and your three sons there. We wish you good luck. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
I want to turn to New York right now, stretch the canvas a little bit. Robert Ganji joins us. He's director of the Police Reform Organizing Project in New York City, organization that works to look at abusive police tactics. Robert Ganji, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Big problem the Department of Justice has in Ferguson. Help us think about this nationally. How much of an outlier is Ferguson? How widespread is this kind of problem?
Well, it's interesting. I've been listening to your broadcast, and virtually every Ferguson Police Department would apply to New York City, which is the jurisdiction I know best, but also would apply probably to virtually every large urban jurisdiction in the country. One of the things the report spoke about was how quotas drive police conduct in Ferguson, the pressure on individual officers to make arrests and to issue summonses as a way to show their productivity. Very similar problem in New York City. The disparity in arrests, I think the report showed that the population in Ferguson is 67% black, and black people make up 93% of the arrests. In New York City, for example, in 2013, black and brown people made up 91% of the misdemeanor arrests in New York City, and black and brown people in New York City make up 54% of the population. So the kind of blatantly racist tactics that were perpetuated by the police department in Ferguson also apply very much so in New York City.
But your logic there is that everybody commits misdemeanors, but it's black and brown people who get picked up for them? Is that what you're saying?
That's virtually the case. I know it's sometimes it's hard to, particularly for white people, to believe these statistics and to believe these stories, because their experience of police officers and police departments is virtually entirely different than the experience that people of color have of policing. But the kind of infractions that people get arrested for in New York City, and it sounds like the same kind of policing takes place in Ferguson, people of color in New York City can get arrested for littering, can get arrested for riding your bike on the sidewalk, carrying an open alcohol container. We obviously have a subway system in New York City. People can get arrested for walking between two subway cars, for having their foot up on a subway seat. People get arrested for begging in New York City. All those activities, and they're not crimes. They're violations of municipal codes. They're not even legally considered crimes. They're considered infractions. Those activities have been virtually decriminalized in white communities. It is virtually only people of color who either get tickets or get arrested for engaging in those actions. And it is, again, a blatantly racist practice. And another thing that's similar in New York City to Ferguson is the top police brass will deny that these practices exist. They will say we don't have quotas. They will say we don't target people of color. But the numbers, their own statistics, belie those claims. And the reality on the ground, when you go into the courtrooms in New York City and you see who's being arrested and who's being charged, it's virtually all people of color.
Let me go to Detroit, if I may, Robert. Liam is on the line. Hi, Liam. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a couple of points real quick. First of all, race is heavily entangled in this issue, but race is a factor that only exacerbates what the real problem is. This is something that happens. I mean, I could tell you stories from here in Detroit that would curl your hair. And we just got, our police department here just got out of a Department of Justice supervision.
What's the real problem, Liam, if it's not race?
The real problem is that our police in this country have been allowed to develop a culture that is adversarial in nature. I've never heard the phrase servant protect mentioned around a police officer when every single one of them didn't just start guffawing with laughter.
Why do you think it's become adversarial?
Because the financial part, where they're trying to just bring revenue into the cities, that's part of it. The racial aspect is part of it. We used to have something here in Detroit called salt and pepper. And those of us on the street used to always get busted for salt and pepper. And what that means is a black guy and a white guy riding in a car together. And it happened in the suburbs. It happened in the city because the police assumed that if a black guy and a white guy were in a car, they were doing something illegal. You didn't have to break any traffic laws. They would just pull you over.
Liam, in Detroit, I appreciate your call. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking about the Department of Justice report on race and policing in Ferguson, Missouri, what it has now laid out for the whole country to see. Antonio French is with us from St. Louis, alderman there from St. Louis 21st Ward. Wesley Lowry is with us from the Washington Post. Did a lot of reporting on the uproar last summer in Ferguson, was arrested himself in a McDonald's, sort of famously there. Robert Ganji is with us from New York, director of the Police Reform Organizing Project in New York City. Here's a little sound from August. A woman in the streets talked with the New York Times about the protests in Ferguson, saying, you know, yeah, well, the police are kind of gang.
We trying to be heard and be one, where even all the gang members and stuff is coming together. You know, that ain't normal. They waiting to go against that one gang, which is the police. They one gang. They a gang.
They are a gang. Here's the mayor of Ferguson last night promising changes in the department and in his region.
Today's report allows the city of Ferguson to identify the problems not only in our police department, but in the entire St. Louis region. We must do better, not only as a city, but as a state and a country. We must all work to address issues of racial disparity in all aspects of society.
With us right now, as well from New York, Eugene O'Donnell, lecturer at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, former police officer in New York City Police Department. Eugene O'Donnell, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Pretty heavy stuff coming down on the Ferguson Police Department here. Is it justified?
Oh, some of it's smoking gun justified, but some of it is unfortunately skirts the real issue, which is a complete collapse in political leadership. That's not mentioned in the report. The state legislature, the governor, the attorney general, localities, everybody should be on the hook here. These local localities are starved for revenue, and the idea that you get that revenue by getting the cops as tax collectors is not only anti-community, it's anti-police.
You said, why wasn't the Labor Secretary of the United States in Ferguson? What are you getting at there, Eugene?
There's parts of this report, the 95% jaywalking is unforgivable. There's an argument that...
That is 95% of jaywalking citations African-American.
Correct. So that, to me, is just, you know, that's unconscionable. But the reality is, I hate to say this, but I think the Justice Department, some of this is disingenuous because there's core issues here. The Labor Secretary, as I said, the Commerce Secretary, the Education Secretary, these are the people that should have been in there on the ground.
Meaning the economy, the education system, that if you let everything go to hell, it's not surprising when police are up have trouble handling it? Is that what you mean?
I wouldn't make that the core issue. There's clearly police issues, but that's an issue as well.
Antonio French, are you willing to, you know, go to those issues here? How much do you want to keep the spotlight right on the police?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, if a community has suffered from great, you know, disinvestment or lack of investment and poverty issues, you're going to see high crime rates. But that's not what this is about. What this is about how we allow police departments to behave, how we allow professionals, law enforcement professionals, to behave, and how we manage the role of police departments in these communities. So I think what you're talking about is a lack of accountability. I do agree that there is a lack of management and oversight from both elected officials and appointed officials. And that's what protesters and people in the streets have been calling for, is more accountability and somebody to take responsibility for some of these actions.
Michael in Weston, Massachusetts is calling. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am a former local police officer.
Yeah.
Now I'm a homicide investigator, and I'm from Massachusetts. I'd like to make a couple points, and I'd just like to say, could you please try to walk in a police officer's shoes and see what we've seen as far as literally being spit on, saliva in my face, as well as going to domestic violence calls where we're called there, where there's an actual victim, and we end up being attacked by an entire family, by the victim, by the perpetrator of the domestic violence. And, Tom, I've got to tell you, now as a homicide investigator, it's very disturbing when you look at who is murdering who and the victims and the perpetrators of these crimes. We've got some deeply ingrained issues in our society. I'm a white male, but Tom, I've got no problem with another race. I love humans, and I'd like to improve our society, especially in Springfield. If you look at what's happening in Springfield, it is like the downfall of civilization. There are young kids that are having kids that don't seem to care about these kids, and the perpetration of violence and drugs that are ingrained in that, it's extremely frustrating to me.
Michael, we've got big social problems, big economic problems. There's no question about it. But when you look at this Ferguson report as a police officer and you see this email traffic where they're calling the president a monkey, and, you know,
That's reprehensible.
It makes people wonder if it's if yes, what you're saying is true. But what about is the racism not also true?
With just like with everything else, I believe racism exists. Yes, I do. But I got to tell you, if you speak to a police officer and you get to know a police officer, just like police officers need to get to know the communities that they're policing, we need to work together. And we have to say, at the end of the day, we are humans and we love each other and we're going to get through these problems together. But if we say it is the police against the society as a whole, that we cannot buy into that. Get to know me. Get to know a police officer because they are good people. Just like I do believe when we go and investigate homicides in these cities, in Holyoke and in Springfield, we are dealing with some good people.
Michael, we've got Antonio French. How do you respond to that? You know, police officers thinking, well, look, we're all humans. We love each other. Are you confident that that was the attitude of Ferguson police toward the citizens of their town?
Well, you know, I don't disagree with the caller at all that that you know the vast majority of police officers you know wear the badge and serve very well, and you know cities and African American communities, especially those suffering from high crime, need police, and so that is why it is so damaging when we allow these that small minority of police officers to get out of control to engage in this kind of behavior, because it breaks down that critical trust that you need, that is required for police to be effective. And so in that way, you know, the good police officers should be joining with those that are calling for greater accountability to weed out those bad apples that are described in this DOJ report.
Wesley Lowery.
Tom, let me say something that I think is very important. The critics of police practices like us at the Police Reform Organizing Project, for us, it's not a matter of the personnel. It's a matter of the policy and the practice. It's not even a matter of the quote-unquote few bad apples. Because of policy, because of quota systems, because in a place like Ferguson there's so much emphasis on revenue, many, many officers engage in objectionable practices. And also, the problem with the focus on low-level infractions that exists in New York City and also obviously exists in Ferguson is police officers aren't fighting crime, the kind of crime mentioned by the caller. Jaywalking is not a crime. Littering is not a crime. Driving your car with a broken taillight is not a crime. People should not be criminalized for engaging in those infractions, particularly when the only people virtually that you're criminalizing are people of color.
But Robert, let me put it to you, it's much more difficult
for the police to focus on and to respond to serious felonies because the behavior, not the practices of the police department have engendered antagonism and distrust among people of color.
But Eugene O'Donnell is saying, from John Jay College of Criminal Justice, saying it's really a failing of bigger political leaders. We have social, economic, education problems here, and it all comes down on the police, and if they're imperfect at dealing with all that, who's surprised?
Well, no, I agree with you, and I think the leadership in New York City is also a problem when it comes to these issues, that there are deep-seated economic and social justice issues that are involved, but that does not, at the same time, absolve the police from engaging in quota-driven policing that targets low-income people of color who are not engaged in predatory or dangerous behavior. So that there should be actually more resources taken away from this kind of policing that is really not promoting public safety, but in some ways undermining public safety, and those resources should be put into more school programs, better health care services, better housing for people, job training and job development for people.
Eugene O'Donnell, what about that? The implication that bad policing can kind of turn into a predatory system that aggravates problems rather than helping fix them. Just dial it back.
Well, the interesting thing about Ferguson, I've been to Ferguson, there's nothing particularly dangerous or an outlier about Ferguson. This is not a very super unsafe community.
Yep.
The bigger issue in the country that we have to keep attention to is the Justice Department tends to not go after police departments that are totally ineffective, totally unengaged. Cities like Philadelphia, and traditionally there's a good mayor at the moment, but where, you know, a city where you've had 5,000 African-American kids killed and no eyes were blinked over that. Nobody did anything about that. So going after departments that are, and this department is set up particularly to be gone after, because I don't know, I don't think there's any rationale for a lot of this enforcement. It's helter-skelter and clearly, has a racial overtone. But some of the stuff in the report is really unfair in the sense that we have these big city homicide problems, and for many police departments, their solution is to simply do nothing. And I think that's the worst scenario that we have.
Are you suggesting that's what could come out of this? The police just back off and you get a more crime-ridden situation?
Right, and that's the reality here is this Radio Shack management of some of these police departments has to be dismantled.
What do you mean by that, Radio Shack management?
Some of these police chiefs are absolutely, and mayors in the Ferguson city, that town, the political leadership is cocooned off from reality. But you will go into police departments where the chief tells you how great they're doing, and it's clear on the ground they're not. This is the reality. We shouldn't have this either-or formulation, and particularly in poor neighborhoods, it shouldn't be. We either have a department that's capricious and arbitrary and does enforcement without any kind of rationale, or a department that is simply rolls up the windows and gets there an hour late after things happen, which is commonplace and doesn't seem to get a lot of attention from the Justice Department. We got cities where 60% of the people who murder get away. Where is the Justice Department on that issue? They should be engaged in that issue as well.
Joe in Milwaukee. Joe, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. The statistics here in Milwaukee are pretty grim, and they really ought to be looked at as well by the Department of Justice. One out of every two, that is to say 50% of black men between the ages of 18 and, I think, 35, basically employment age, have been in jail at some point in their lives. One out of eight currently are in jail. You would be hard-pressed to find a man of that age range who hasn't been pulled over multiple times for nothing.
Is it a racial bias problem in Milwaukee, Joe?
It is racial profiling. That is the problem, I believe, in all of these areas. It's racial profiling. You're aiming the entire justice system at one group of people who are already poor and who are already having, a variety of social disadvantages, and making the problem dramatically worse. If it happened, I've never been pulled over for nothing in my life. Okay?
You're white,
and
I take
no
it.
I'm white. And none of my white friends have ever been pulled over for nothing. My black friends, I don't know one who hasn't been pulled over for nothing multiple times. They expect it to happen.
Joe, I appreciate your call, Joe. Let me get one more, if I may. Charles in Brookline, Massachusetts, right in our backyard here. Charles, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for your show. We love you out here. But I just wanted, two things jumped out at me when I heard this whole report. One is the obvious disproportionate treatment between blacks and whites, and then secondly, the whole revenue stream that's generated.
Yeah.
I have kind of a long story, which I won't go into too much, but...
Make it real short. We're up against the clock, Charles. What's the bottom line?
I had a $29 ticket in Brookline for taking a left turn on Beacon Street near the Trader Joe's, which you apparently can't do. It costs some money just to fight the ticket, which I tried to do.
Yeah.
I lost. I had 20 days to pay. It got ahead of me, lost track of it. Fast forward, they suspended my license. I was driving through Brookline at a stop and was pulled over for supposedly not making a full stop.
Yeah.
And my license had expired at midnight. This was at 10:30 in the morning.
Okay.
They arrested me. They booked and fingerprinted me. They put me in a jail cell until about 3 in the afternoon, at which point I was brought before a judge. They brought me to the judge in handcuffs and had my ankles shackled.
Is race an issue here, Charles?
I believe, yeah. I don't know. I mean, if
are you white, black?
No, I'm a black male.
Okay.
And I feel like it was racial profiling to begin with, because I felt like I made a stop. And I also feel like if my license had been expired for 10 hours, they really had the option to just say, hey,
let's work this out.
Get this done.
Yeah.
basically, I ended up with $300 in court fees, about $100 to reinstate my license, $200 to clean up the ticket.
And the memory of being taken into court in shackles. I got to go to Antonio French here. Antonio, what do you think will happen in Ferguson? What's the answer to this? How big a cleanup do you expect, or is this a few days of blazing national attention and then we're right back where we were?
Well, I think the DOJ report was the first step. People had been complaining of this and describing the experience for a long time, but the DOJ report now makes it undeniable. What I hoped was that last night at the press conference that the Ferguson city government would take some responsibility and say that they were actually going to, put some people on the line who had been who had really been perpetrating this. We didn't see that. So what I fear is that it may require more DOJ action, and it also is going to require some action from the state of Missouri and the St. Louis county government. But a lot of these small municipalities and small police departments are not going to go away without a fight. And so our fight is not over, but we now have a good weapon in this DOJ report to really substantiate a lot of these experiences.
Wesley Lowry, do you see big change coming here? You've reported on Ferguson. Department of Justice is a pretty big hammer. Big enough?
We'll see if it's big enough. There certainly will be some change in Ferguson. The biggest question here, though, is it change in the municipality of Ferguson, or will we see wholesale change across St. Louis County?
Well, and maybe wider than that, the whole country watching this case. Wesley Lowry with The Washington Post. Thank you very much for joining us today, Wesley.
Anytime.
Robert Ganji with the Police Reform Organizing Project in New York. Mr. Ganji, thank you for your time and thoughts.
Thank you, Tom.
Eugene O'Donnell at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Thank you for joining us, Eugene.
Thanks, Tom.
And Antonio French, St. Louis Alderman, 21st Ward. Thanks for joining us, Mr. French.
Thank you.
Tomorrow in this hour, all the week, news in review, and there has been a lot. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.